This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
An Erio's original.
Hello, and welcome to Web Crawlers, the podcast where we do a deep dive into some of our favorite mysteries. Each week, we will introduce our topic, lay out our research and findings, reveal some conspiracy theories, and conclude.
I turned off my video by accident, and I'm so sorry for all of you just listening. It was that I turned off my video, and it really shocked Allie.
It did. I got startled. I thought maybe I didn't know what happened. I thought maybe she got kidnapped and I was going to have to call Liam Neeson. Anyways, and then we conclude with our own hypothesis. I'm Allie Screamel.
I'm Melissa Stettin.
And I'm, I didn't even think to think of this. I'm Muscrima Blasucci, the producer.
Muscrima. That really rolls off the tongue. Wow, that's really beautiful. Muscrima.
If you're Allie Screamel, you're Muscrima. I can be Mel Screama Screamin'.
Oh, sounds like a roller coaster. No. I'm going to go on the Mel Screama Screamin'.
Yeah. Sounds sexual to me for some reason. Now we're recording this a week early, right after we recorded our last episode. So we don't have any new patrons for today, do we? I just wanted to give that disclaimer just so everyone knew that's the reason we had no
It's not
new
because
patrons.
No otherwise, one likes us.
Otherwise, we'd be chock full
so
of patrons.
Many.
Melissa, what is our episode on today?
Today is a spooky tale.
Wow, I can't wait.
In the fall of 1986, the Andrews family experienced what they thought was a demonic haunting inside their Pepperell, Massachusetts home. It's about 60 miles outside of Boston. But when they discovered what the culprit was, it was far more disturbing than anything they could imagine. Let's get into it.
Yes.
So it's 1986. It's the fall, right outside of Boston.
I'm seeing Harry Met Sally vibes.
Yes, you are. Brian Andrews, he lives with his two daughters, Annie and Jessica. Annie is 15 and Jessica's 8.
Was Annie okay?
Oh, Allie.
Annie, why don't you ask her?
Annie,
are you okay?
I think she's okay now, but not during this story.
Uh-oh.
So their mom had just died from cancer. And their dad is a bus driver. So, like, he had to work extra hard to take care of his two kids. He was always working. He worked long hours. So the daughters are often home alone. So one evening, the phone rings. Annie answers it, and it's a boy named Danny. He says that he got her number from one of her friends at her high school and saw her and was like, yeah, you seemed really cool. I just wanted to call you and talk to you. So they start talking. And so, like, it's the 80s. So there's, like, no social media. Like, this is how you communicate with people. Like, you talk to them on the phone. You got to get to know them. So they ended up talking, like, quite a bit. And Annie didn't know who this was. She had never seen this boy before. So he described himself, said he was 16. He said he was good looking, athletic, smart, and blonde. And because we all know blondes are more fun. So after talking for a few weeks, Danny asks Annie if she wants to go on a date to the county fair. And Annie's like, yes, please.
Oh, God.
So then Danny comes over to Annie's house. And she was pretty shocked to see that the guy he described himself as was not him. He was, like, shorter. He was disheveled. He was not attractive. He had dark hair. He was not athletic at all.
Why, they play a pickup game and he wasn't good?
Oh, right. I was like, what? Yes, a fit. Yes, he was not athletic. He was not good at the ring toss, apparently.
Couldn't win her a goldfish at that county fair.
Right. So, yeah. But Annie felt bad and was like, okay, well, I guess I'll still go on this date with you. Like, we were talking and whatever. So they did. And then during their date, Danny discovered that Annie and Jessica had recently lost their mother to cancer because she was talking about it. And Danny was, like, weirdly interested in the death. Like, asking a ton of questions about it. And Annie later said that it seemed like he was obsessed with the death of her mother. Like, he asked her how she felt at the moment her mom died and, like, how much she suffered from it. Like, he was just being a real weirdo. And so, like, after an hour on this date, Annie said she needed to go home because she was, like, getting all sorts of weird vibes from him. She's like, okay, yeah, well, I gotta go home. Nice to meet you. And so then afterwards, she decided that, like, she didn't want to see him again, obviously. So she avoided him and didn't answer his calls. And then she didn't see Danny again willingly. However, she would see him again under much different circumstances.
Uh-oh.
Dun, dun, dun. Okay, so let's talk about this kid, Danny LaPlante. He was born in 1970 in Townsend, Massachusetts. And he had a pretty rough childhood. He suffered from sexual and psychological abuse from multiple adults in his life.
Oh, God.
His dad was super abusive. He was the one who did the majority of the punishments. He was tormenting him on, like, a regular basis. And Danny also struggled in school, both academically and socially. He was dyslexic. He didn't have a ton of friends. And the very few friends he had called him weird and creepy. So he was referred to a psychiatrist for his abnormal behavior and lack of hygiene. And he was diagnosed with ADHD. But then his psychiatrist started sexually abusing him as well.
What?
So that just added, like, another horrible layer to the abuse he was receiving from his dad. So he had
a
terrible childhood. So then Danny started stealing from people and breaking into people's homes. And, like, he would not only steal things, but he would leave items behind. And he would also move items around in people's homes in such a way that it was, like, clear that someone had entered the property.
Mm-mm.
But, like, it wasn't that obvious that people would notice. So, like, people would come home and be like, what's it? Did I put that there? Oh, weird. I must have put that there. Like, they didn't, like, he would just do that to fuck with people. So, like, eventually he was just breaking in homes, like, for fun, just to, like, torment people. Like a Jesus real psychopath. Christ. Okay. And then one night, Annie and her sister Jessica wanted to contact their dead mother. So they performed a seance in the basement.
Oh, no.
And nothing really happened from the seance. And their dad came home from work and told them to knock it off. He's like, don't do that. Like, that's, what are you guys doing? That's insane. And so they went to bed. And then later that same night, they heard a knocking against their bedroom walls as they slept. They assumed it was the spirit of their mother.
Oh, no.
And they started asking it questions. And then it would reply by knocking and tapping on the wall. So they're like, oh, my God.
Oh, God.
Our spirit of our mom is here. And it's communicating with us. So this went on for several nights. And over time, objects in the house began to disappear. Like items that were on a table one day would be thrown on the floor. Furniture would be moved around the rooms.
Oh, Jesus.
They would make a bowl of food. And if they would walk away from it, come back, the food would be gone.
Oh, God.
And the doorbell would ring. They would answer it. No one would be there. So Annie and Jessica thought they were being haunted by a demon.
Of course. That's what I would think for sure.
And their dad, Brian, he didn't believe them. He thought the girls were doing this themselves. They told their dad that they let a demon come into the house during their seance. But the dad was like, uh-huh. Yeah, sure you did. He assumed his daughters were emotionally struggling with the death of their mother. He thought they were just like acting out.
Mm-hmm.
So one night in January of 1987, the girls were home alone watching a movie. Their dad was at work and they hadn't heard this knocking for a while, but then it started up again.
Oh, no.
It was so constant that it was like making them go crazy. But this particular night, however, it seemed like the noises were not coming from the walls, but from the basement. So their dad wasn't home. So the girls grabbed a knife from the kitchen and decided to go down to the basement to check it out. And when they got down to the basement, they saw something written on the wall in blood.
Oh my God.
It said, I'm in your room. Come and find me.
Oh, Jesus.
So the girls freaked the fuck out. They ran out of the house into a neighbor's house. And they waited for their dad to return home. And they told him what they found. So the dad calls the police. And then they go inside the house into the basement, and the police like touch the writing on the wall, and it's ketchup.
Oh, God.
And so Brian still believed that it was his daughters doing this.
Oh, Brian.
He's like, you guys, you have to knock this stuff off. Like, I get it. You need attention. Your mother died. And so he made them go to counseling to help them cope with what he thought was the grief of losing their mother. And then several weeks later, a similar incident occurred. So again, the girls heard knocking sounds, but this time it sounds like it's coming from upstairs in Annie's room. So they go up to investigate. And when they entered the room, they saw another message written in what they thought was blood. It said, I'm back. Find me if you can.
This would be so scary. Yes. If this is happening to you. This would be so terrifying. And your dad didn't believe you and you're like a little girl.
And you're like in counseling, like telling them. They're like, uh-huh, yeah. Sure it is, sweetie. Sure it is. So the same thing happened again. The girls ran out of the house. They went to the neighbor's house. They called their dad to come home from work. And so Brian came over to the neighbor's house. The girls were like crying and terrified. And even the neighbor was like, yeah, I don't think they're making this up. Like, they are obviously disturbed. Like, something for sure was happening. So Brian went inside the house to see what the hell was going on. And when he got inside, he noticed that, like, a lot of stuff was out of place. Every TV was turned on. Stuff was thrown all over. So he was like, okay, obviously it's not my daughter's doing this.
Oh.
So Brian went up to Annie's room and he saw the thing written on the wall. And he also saw a picture of Annie on the wall with a knife stabbed through it.
Oh, my God.
And there was another message was painted that said, marry me.
Oh, Jesus.
And then Brian saw a figure on the other side of the room. It was a young boy dressed in the clothing of Brian's deceased wife.
What?
Yeah, he was wearing her makeup. He was wearing a dress and a blonde wig. And he was holding a hatchet.
Is this a true story or is this a fake story?
It's a true story. That young boy was Danny LaPlante.
This is so
this
scary.
Sounds like an urban this like, legend. This sounds like the urban yeah, legend of Danny fake. LaPlante. Yeah.
It's real. This is really what happened. It's real. This is a real person. God. Google him. He's real. So then.
Oh, my God.
So then Danny then like lunges after Brian, but Brian runs out of the room. He slams the door. He runs outside. He calls the cops. But Brian doesn't see Danny leave the house at all. So he like waits outside for the cops. And when they arrive, they discovered why it was so easy for Danny to disappear all of a sudden. An officer found a hidden crawl space behind a cupboard, which was built into the wall of Annie's bedroom.
Oh, no.
And when the officer opened the hatch, he discovered Danny LaPlante curled up inside.
Shut up. He was inside the house.
He was in the house. And so the officers arrested Danny, and then they did like a thorough search of the home. And to their horror, they discovered that Danny had been living inside the walls of their home. The passageway where they discovered Danny and had been tunneled around to other areas of the house.
Let's take a quick break for announcements. Webcrawlers has a Patreon to get access to rewards, bonus episodes, videos, shout outs. Please go to patreon.com/webcrawlers. You can donate as little as $2 a month to become a patron. Also, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, and we will read you on our mailbag episodes. And Erios has a hotline. We are almost caught up on voicemails. Can you believe it?
Wow, I can't.
I can't either. Insert jingle here.
626-604-6262.
Erios.
Please continue to call us and we will continue to play your voicemails.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Now, back to our regularly scheduled program.
Yeah, he was living in the walls. Oh, the creepiest thing about this is that there were a bunch of peepholes around so that Danny could watch Annie from whichever room she was in. And like random items and their clothing that was missing was found in the crawl space. There was like food and beer and drinks.
He was like a little mouse.
Yeah. Just like collecting items.
A little rat.
So obviously Danny had been pretending to be the ghost of Annie and Jessica's mother in order to torment them. And they thought that Danny was planning on revealing himself to the girls while dressed as their dead mother. Whether to like genuinely pass himself off as her spirit or just like terrify them. He was also holding a hatchet. So like who knows what his plans were.
Yeah, that's fucked.
So then Danny was placed into a juvenile facility because he was 16, where he remained until October 1987. And then almost immediately following his release, he started stealing and robbing houses again.
Oh, God.
During one of his robberies, he obtained two handguns. And then on December 1st, 1987, he broke into the Gustafson family home, which is like a half mile from his own house. Inside the house, he saw Priscilla Gustafson, 33. She was pregnant. And her two young children, Abigail and William.
Oh, no.
And Priscilla's husband, Andrew Gustafson, was at work when when Danny invaded his home. And when he got home, he discovered a horrible sight.
Oh, God.
Andrew discovered Priscilla laying face down on her bed. Her pillows were covered with blood. She had been shot multiple times in the head. And so he called the police. And then they discovered the bodies of Andrew's two children in different bathtubs. They had both been drowned.
Oh, my God.
So, like, it didn't take long for the authorities to link the Gustafson family murder with Danny. The police tried to arrest him, but they found that he had just fled.
Oh, Jesus.
He, like, ran into the woods. So there was a manhunt. And then a few towns over from Townsend, Danny broke into a woman's home and kidnapped her in her car. The woman escaped, but Danny was spotted by someone who had seen his picture on the news. And so Danny was discovered hiding in a dumpster 48 hours after the manhunt for him began. So when he was searched, there was some hair belonging to Abigail Gustafson was discovered on his sock. So, like, that was enough evidence to convict him.
Good, thank God.
And a year later, he was sentenced to 3 life sentences for the murder of the Gustafson family.
Thank God. Jesus Christ.
And then since his incarceration, he has shown no remorse at all for his actions. From 1988 to 2014, he attempted to sue the courts multiple times for violation of his rights. In one case, he claimed that the prison system violated his religious rights as he was allegedly a practicing Wiccan. Therefore, he claimed he required sufficient materials in order to carry out certain satanic rites, but had been denied by the prison officials.
Okay, well, first of all, Satanism and Wiccanism are, right. I don't even know if it's Wiccan, Wicca, are two entirely different things. And one of the, like, major tenets of Wicca is, like, do no harm. So
he was acting a fool.
He's talking out
of his
asshole.
I would love Allie in, like, as part of the jury, like, telling the other jury members that, being like, okay, guys, listen.
This is important. Here's the main problem. I know he killed some people, but here's the real issue.
This is a problem. I can't not say anything.
I can't not hold my tongue on this anymore.
This is eating me alive.
So Danny was apparently asking for dragon's blood, honeysuckle, and black opium.
This guy.
To, like, do some weird spells or something. And the Wiccan community was like, they didn't claim him or anything. They're like, we don't know her. No, that's not.
Yeah, we don't know her. We don't know her.
So then in 2017, however, it seems that maybe Danny has finally come to terms with his actions, although he was appealing for a reduced sentence. And he said, I do not have the words to fully express my profound sorrow, but I am truly sorry for the harm I have caused. From the very essence of who I am, from the depth of my soul, I am sorry. Yeah, right, no. Dude.
I don't believe you. I don't believe you.
But fortunately, his appeal was denied. And he's going to spend the rest of his life in jail with no chance of early release. And Andrew Gustafson, he passed away in 2014, so he wasn't around to hear of Danny LaPlante's imprisonment for good. So that's sad. But however, upon his deathbed, Gustafson allegedly claimed, don't ever let him out. He should rot in prison.
I agree. I wonder if you are born a sociopath or if you can... be made a sociopath through events that happened to
you? I think it's probably both, because this guy had a very shitty childhood. I'm sure that had a lot to do with it. But also, yeah, I'm sure some people are born into like loving families and they just like, for one reason or the other.
Oh, here's something from Scientific American. Can you make a sociopath either through brain injury or types of trauma? Psychologist John Watson, the founder of behaviorism, once said, "Give me a dozen healthy infants, well-formed, in my own specified world to bring them up in, and I'll guarantee to take any one at random and train him to become any type of specialist I might select."
This reminds me of that Twitter thread 2 years ago, someone living in the walls. Do you guys remember this?
No.
No.
So this guy, Grady Hendricks, started writing this scary story.
Oh, it's kind of ringing a bell.
He starts off by saying, this was October 30th, 2019. He says, "Everyone's telling scary stories for Halloween, so I'll talk about something that happened to me when I was a kid, because, hey, trauma never gets old. When I turned 9, I realized I could sneak downstairs after everyone was asleep and eat anything I wanted in the fridge. No one ever noticed. I can make peanut butter cheese whiz and a mayo sandwich." That's insane.
That's the trauma, That's the trauma right there.
"Eat leftover pizza, scrape off the icing from birthday cakes. As long as I was careful, I could do anything. Creeping down was the hardest part. I had to navigate the dark pit, the pitch dark house, all the way downstairs in total darkness like a tiny ninja. One night in May 1981, we ordered from Fish and Shrimp House. I waited until everyone was asleep and crept downstairs to eat the leftover sweet and sour pork, and it took forever. I finally stepped into the totally dark den. All of a sudden, I heard a fork click on the counter. I froze. The microwave clock light showed the outline of a man sitting at our kitchen counter. He couldn't see me, but I saw him, a skinny guy, eating our leftovers and drinking our milk from the carton. I can't explain how terrifying it is for someone to be in your house. I slowly backed away, crept upstairs, and woke up my mom and dad, but they made way too much noise and took way too long, and by the time they got downstairs, the kitchen was empty. Everyone said I read too many horror comics, so they blew off what I said, but no way I was pouring that milk on my cereal."
No, sounds like something I would say, like,
yeah, no way.
Someone being in our kitchen, I'm not using that milk.
Hell no.
Oh my
so
God.
So I started tracking the position of everything in the kitchen. One day, the paper napkin holder was on the wrong side of the counter. Another day, a mug was in the sink that was not there the night before. My bedroom door didn't lock, so I kept a steak knife under my pillow. I must have stabbed myself in the hand 1,000 times, checking to make sure it was there. Then in August, I was in my room reading when I looked up. There's an AC vent over my bed. Behind the vent, a pair of eyes were watching me. I freaked and raised hell until my parents searched our attic and crawl space under the house. Nothing. So the last week of August, our house started to smell.
Oh, no.
One night, rice fell out of the vent over my bed. Matt and maggots. The AC people said something had probably crawled into our vents and died. Turns out what had crawled into our vents and died was the guy. We lived in an old house with lots of space between the walls and big ducts. He'd been living in them since May, at least. He'd put a foam pad beside my bedroom vent so we'd be comfortable while he watched me. The police said he made lots of drawings, but when I asked, they pretended they hadn't said anything. No one ever identified him. He was buried as John Doe. To this day, I can't look inside the vents and houses. But sometimes when I'm at someone's house, I'll smell a little BO coming from their central air conditioning, and I'll wonder who's living back there in the ducts. Who's living in the dark?
Oh my God. That's terrifying.
I hadn't heard that. Who was the guy who wrote that story? Or what was
Grady Hendricks.
Whoa. Whoa, whoa, whoa. That's creepy as hell.
Yeah.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, it's terrifying. And then I was like, well, are there other instances of people living in walls? And I found one.
Well, to answer our question from earlier, it is possible to mold someone into a psychopath. Scientific American says psychopathy, also called sociopathy, is defined by a lack of empathy, deceitfulness, and complete selfishness. Current thinking is that although certain genes may predispose people towards psychopathy, their environment seems to provide the ultimate catalyst. Thus, a person who possesses the particular genes associated with this malady and is brought up in an abusive or neglectful household will be at higher risk of exhibiting the traits associated with this disorder.
Huh.
So interesting. Also, trauma can do it if you have a damage to the front lobe.
Yeah, getting bonked on the head.
Getting bonked on the head. Can you imagine you're on vacation in Hawaii, you get bonked in the head by a coconut, and then all of a sudden you're a sociopath?
That's crazy.
No, I can't. That'll no, I can't imagine vacation. That. That would be really wild.
That'd be a good Adam Sandler movie, actually.
That would be. Isn't that 50 First Dates?
Yeah.
Yeah, so this article from 2016... says it's just weird. Seattle man finds stranger living in his attic.
Oof.
So when Davis Wallman arrived at his Green Lake home on Monday night, he noticed a couple lights on inside that usually would be off. He once inside, he found a screen from a bathroom window inside the tub, but he didn't think too much of it until the next morning when strange noises in the attic startled him. If you see a screen in your bathtub, that's weird. You're not like...
I'd be like, someone broke in.
Oh, I guess that's weird. Maybe I'll sleep and see what happens. So the bathroom window, which is a small space, is located upstairs, but can't easily be accessed without someone or something to lift a person up. So this guy hears stuff in his attic. He tries to figure out what's going on. He noticed a light was on in his office and the door was locked. So he knocked on the door. He didn't get a response. And then... he heard a woman's voice from this like locked office. It goes, "Jimmy, is that you, Jimmy?"
Oh God.
And he's like, "No, it's not Jimmy. Who is this? And why are you in my house?" So he called 911. And then the woman, who's a stranger, opened the office door and saw him. And the dude's like, who are you? Why are you in my house?" And she just kept going. She kept saying, "This is my house. I live here. I've been here for 3 days. Jimmy said I could live here. Jimmy said I could stay here." And so he called the police. The woman like ran off before the police got there. Like nothing was stolen. There was a fire escape ladder that he found hanging from the deck, which the suspect likely found inside a closet in the house. And he said the woman was just living in his attic. She ran off and he had a locksmith change all the locks and the doors and like, that's it.
That's so crazy. I once had a girlfriend who got so drunk and she lived in an apartment complex that she tried to get into the wrong apartment. I guess someone's door was unlocked and she like walked in and like sat down and like started watching TV and the woman was like, "Get out." And then my friend was like, "This is my apartment. You get out. What are you doing in here?" And the woman was like, "This is my apartment. You live two doors down." Like,
no. Whoa. Oh. Yeah.
I was like, "I think you have a problem, lady."
Well, so there, that's the story of the boy living in the walls.
Wow. Well, that is really, really, that's like actually one of the scariest. The image of him living in the walls and then coming out in all the mother's clothing is so scary.
God, that's not great. That's terrifying. All the peoples.
Yeah, that's really, that's like Psycho. It's like the movie Psycho. It's like 10 movies in one. That's really terrifying.
Uh-huh.
If you have any crazy stories about someone living in your house or living in the walls, please let us know. Melissa, where can people reach us?
You can email us at webcrawlerspod@gmail.com.
All right. Well, I am Allie Spooky Siegel.
I'm Melissa Living in Your Walls Stetton.
And I'm producer let's just respect each other's space, Maria.
Don't drink the milk.
Yeah, don't drink the milk. The milk,
Lasucci. Okay, bye guys.
Bye.
Original.
Powered by
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.